D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by our favorite dual-threat quarterback, ESPN NFL analyst, head coach of the Ensworth Tigers, Tim Hasselbeck. How are you, Tim?
Doing great, fellas. How you doing?
We are doing excellent. So we are talking about Jeremy Fowler's latest list on ESPN.com. Today he's ranking the top 10 defensive tackles with help from people around the league. Jeffrey Simmons comes in at number 4, but there was a quote at the bottom that we have highlighted, and I would love your opinion on this because it's not something, frankly, that we had considered before we read it. An NFL coordinator quoted, talking about Jeffrey Simmons, said, quote, "Morale gets low and it's hard to rush when you're always playing from behind." So as we are evaluating Jeffrey Simmons, how much should we take that into account?
Yeah, look, I think it's fair. If you're if you play on a good team that, you know, competitive, and so teams are not, you know, in a 4-minute offense, you're talking about a segment of the game that you know, you're either rushing the passer or you're just defending runs. I mean, I think that's – look, I think the team you play on, you know, your scheme, the competitiveness of the games that you play in, all of those things, you know, they factor in, right? Like, there's a reason why – like, you talk about scheme. You know, Wes Welker was catching 100 balls, you know, in New England, and no one knew his name, you know, when he played for the Dolphins prior to that. So, like, yeah, I don't think there's any question that scheme, you know, kind of game flow situation because of the competitiveness of your team and are you playing with leads and are teams throwing late in the game can be a factor in terms of, you know, how that guy's production is viewed statistically, and then also just in terms of what it actually looks like when you look at it at the end of the season. You know, because the sample size at that point is big to say, all right, well, how many times in the fourth quarter, you know, were the Titans, you know, in a situation where there was a 10-point lead and the defensive line had an opportunity to get into their pass rush?
This new season of Quarterback on Netflix has premiered. Kirk Cousins is one of the quarterbacks featured on the program. And he made his most pointed comments, I guess you could say, about the Michael Penix situation. He said he felt, quote, a little bit misled when the Falcons took Michael Penix as high as they did in the draft last year, and said, hey, if I had known this is paraphrasing, if I had known this, it would have affected my decision on leaving Minnesota and joining the Falcons. What are your thoughts on Kirk Cousins peeling back the curtain a little bit on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably as pointed as you'll get from Cousins, right? Like, he does a pretty good job of, you know, I think, you know, trying to operate with class. And, you know, I think that Kirk Cousins wasn't chasing money, right? Like, I think he was looking for a good opportunity and fit, feel like he was going to a place where he was wanted. He had done a good job in Minnesota. There obviously was a huge investment from Atlanta, but I don't think that he was looking to moving his family to Atlanta to have them draft a quarterback in the first round to basically, you know, put a massive pause, hold, end, whatever you want to call it, to his career as a starter in the NFL.
We talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach of the Ensworth Tigers. Tim, Willie had us watch a old school football game back in the 80s, and we'll talk about it later this week.
We might need to get Tim involved in this.
We may just need to get him involved. And it got me to thinking about that era of quarterbacks, and we're talking about early 80s and into the early 90s. We're talking about guys like Joe Montana, Dan Marino, Fouts, Elway, Kelly, and there are a couple more guys you can throw on that list. Just like basketball, we look at, like, the era. This is the era that sort of changed the NBA, whether it was the Magic Johnson and Larry Bird era or the Michael Jordan era. All that era sort of changed the way the NBA is now. Do you think that era of quarterbacks, Montana, Marino, especially Marino, because I was watching Marino the other day, and the things that he was doing then, he could exactly do now, and it would perfectly fit what quarterbacks are taught in the systems that they are running now. So do you think that group of quarterbacks sort of ushered in what we see now?
Yeah, I think Marino.
From a pass standpoint.
From a what standpoint?
A pass standpoint, not necessarily running the football.
I think that Marino and Elway, because they were so physically gifted as throwers, like, did things that, like, you know, other teams weren't necessarily saying, like, yeah, hey, man, like, you know, we want you to try this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think there was definitely an element physically that those guys could do things that was different. It changed things. And I think that there was a stretch after them, like an example, like Favre was a guy that was like, yeah, he's kind of playing by a different set of rules because, you know, he's got a hand cannon attached to his body, right? Like, there's just like there's some of that. I remember my brother actually being in Green Bay and Andy Reid saying to him, like, look, I want you to watch, but I don't want you to copy any of this stuff that he does outside the design of the play. Like, that's actually not for you. But I do want you to watch his leadership style and stuff like that. Like, that's, you know, so I think that there was an element of that. And I think that there is an element now where, like, Mahomes definitely changed it with running this way, throwing it across your body. Like, there is no question that there have been some, you know, quarterback, like, cardinal sin things that you never do that, you know, Josh Allen, Mahomes, guys like that have kind of they've changed that for them a little bit. But I would still say that doesn't apply to everybody still. You know, like, it doesn't apply to Kirk Cousins or Baker Mayfield or Tua or, you know, some of these other quarterbacks. So, yeah, I think there's always a change, and I think a lot of it has to do with, well, what are you like physically? And I think that you could go to other positions and say the same thing. Like, I think you would probably agree at receiver. Like, like, there are some guys that are, you know, 6'4 or taller, they're like, yeah, they can get away with doing some things a little bit differently than the shorter receivers.
No, yeah, absolutely right. In the size, speed, shape of the receiver has changed from what it used to be. So with that being said, Tim, do you think that, you know, the position itself, it has reached its apex as far as, you know, what can be accomplished skill-wise with that position? Or do you think the NFL is going to get to a point where everyone looks like, and I'm not talking about look, like visually, I'm saying the way they play, like Lamar Jackson, where you have to have the ability to run and run to a level where it becomes a weapon for you? Because right now we're headed that way, but we're not there.
Yeah, I don't think that we ever get to a point where it's like that. Mm-hmm. Because I think as good and as dangerous as the running can be, you still need to be able to win from the pocket. I've had the conversation with college coaches, had the conversation with pro coaches. It's why the Indianapolis Colts, you know, have Daniel Jones, you know, theirs, because like what they were doing with Richardson, it wasn't trending to be able to work from inside the pocket. It's why, you know, Jalen Hurts' development inside the pocket is why he's won a Super Bowl. Lamar Jackson's development inside the pocket is why he's, you know, and probably an MVP candidate every year. You know, and it's why you're more likely to have success with Jared Goff or Matthew Stafford than you are with a guy that's not a good passer and can run around. So, like, while I think that the running is helpful and people like it and it's good, I don't think we ever get to a situation where it's like there are all these amazing runners and they've all been able to develop as passers the way that some of these other guys have. Like, I don't think that happens, because I think ultimately the throwing from inside the pocket is always going to be a better, more valuable quality than being able to take off as a runner.
No, and you're exactly right about that. But I think and the only reason I pose that question to you is because I see it at the youth league where these kids are, you know, they are developing as passers, but they are athletes first. And you have to have that ability because the rushers are getting faster. So you got to have that ability to get outside the pocket and be dynamic in that way. But knowing that, like you said, you got to win within the pocket.
I think there's kind of like a minimum athleticism threshold that you've got to hit in terms of being able to move around and stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have the ability to complete passes from inside the pocket and stretch you, you know, 53 and a third wide and, you know, 48 and three, you know, down the field, like if you don't have the ability to do that, then you're starting to minimize the effectiveness of the other players that give you an opportunity to score when you're on the field, right? Like that's the part for me is like, you know, if you were to say, you know, you look at some of these, let's look at the Colts. Mm-hmm. The Colts have good receivers, right? Like they've got like big, long, good, talented receivers that should be able to attack all areas of the field. But if you don't have a quarterback that can consistently complete passes in all areas of the field, then that, like you're impacting them. Yeah. Like you're impacting those guys. So like, I just think you're just less effective as a team. You're easier to defend. That's why I say the development of, you know, some of these guys as passers, you know, that maybe didn't come into the league as passers. Like that to me is impressive. And it doesn't work for everyone. Like that's why, you know, what Jalen Hurts has accomplished with the changes at coordinator and how he's developed as a passer, like that's an incredible feat. And I think Lamar Jackson, same way, coordinator change, develop as a passer, incredible feat. So, I don't think we ever get to a scenario where we look at it and we go, every NFL team is starting an elite runner. I don't think it ever happens.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck, and Tim, we're coming up with summer projects for July because we have to get to training camp before we have more meat to really sink our teeth into when it comes to football. So I have thrown out a sort of a rewatchable football 40 years ago. I picked a game that I just remembered as a kid. It was one of the most fun games that I remember from that time. I found it on YouTube, and we're going to talk more about it, sort of introduce it to our audience later. But you would be perfect for this. Just I thought of this as Derek asked you, because Derek's already sinking his teeth into it and coming up with stuff. And of course,
Derek recommended Michigan State, Iowa
in the 90s. Yeah, right in the mid 90s. Yeah, right around there.
When we was dominant.
Yeah.
Random game, I thought.
I happened to score two touchdowns, but yeah. But I picked a game. It was a Jets Dolphins game from 86.
Okay.
And I was just and your dad, what was his last year in the league?
86.
Okay.
We've been 85.
So I'm sure you had plenty of talks in your family about how the game evolved. I don't know when the last time you watched a full game. I'm not just talking about a couple of highlights, but I was curious what you would see or what you would think you would see on how different the game looks. It really jumps out to me. You know, there's the equipment, there's the face mask, there's the fans and what they're wearing. That's the fun part of it, really. The broadcasting is interesting to me. But from the scheme standpoint, I was going to D-Mace to sort of see what he thought was different. What would your dad say, and what do you think you would see?
Well, I'll tell you what I know I would see because I lived through this. You know, so Joe Gibbs coached in that era, then took 12 years off of football and came back. And when he came back, I was with Washington at that time. So in that span of time, defensively, zone blitz was invented. So when you go back to, you know, that era of football, like you would get like basic zone coverage and then you would get man coverage. And oftentimes like any type of like significant, you know, pressure, linebacker level or secondary level pressure was accompanied with man coverage. Like there weren't these zone blitzes, these simulated pressures that you see nowadays. So it was totally different. And the reason I say that I would notice is like we lived it in Washington and was like, the game changed a little bit, you know? So like, you know, beyond the receivers, you know, in 3-point stances, you know, out by the numbers, like that is definitely, you know, something that would stick out to me. I think offensively, run game stuff, you'd see a lot of the same stuff. You'd see different personnel groups. You see more fullbacks than you see in today's game, like that type of stuff. But, like, you know, I also think you go way back to that era, there's going to be less quick passing game.
Yes.
Right? Like,
mm-hmm.
that's really where the West Coast offense started to change things. The ball was out quicker. You know, guys on the move, you know, prior to that, you know, there was a lot of down the field type throws. So I think there's a lot scheme wise that I would feel like looks drastically different.
Yeah. One thing that jumped out to me is the split backfield. You used to start to see that. And it was less in the mid 80s, but you go back to the early 80s, you had the two guys. You almost never see that now, right? The
well,
one guy on one, one the other.
Come over to Antwerp on Friday night, Willie. Come over to Antwerp on Friday night.
Okay.
I'm just going to tell you right now, they're one of the first formations that goes in for us. Yeah, listen, Roger Craig and Tom Rathman, maybe, like, buckle your chin strap. Let's go.
but did you see it more? Like, I was watching a game. I love to do this, and you can ask the question, Willie. Are you a real nerd? Yes, I am. I was watching a game where the Oilers were playing, and they had Rob Carpenter, who ended up being a pretty good running back for the Giants, and Earl Campbell in the same backfield.
Yep.
And they were standing next to each other. Like, you didn't know who was going to get the ball, who was the lead blocker. They different things than they did back then.
Friday night, August 22nd, Ensworth High School, Frisk Campus.
So is this some throwback offense you have, or is it coming back around in a cycle here?
Look, those are, you know, when you have, like, those guys, like, what you're talking about, and oftentimes you can find kids like that in high school for sure, like, let's say you've got two good running backs. Well, why not play them together? Like, it's different. You know, at certain levels, like, so yeah, but part of the reason you don't see a ton of that in the pros is, like, I'm not saying it specifically about Saquon, but, like, he's like, nah, man, like, it's not my job to jam my neck for him to carry the football. Like I'm a pro, I'm an all pro. I made it right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's different with, you know, Rob Carpenter and other people back in that era was, you know, no one really knew what anyone else was making. It was like, was it your turn to get the ball? Is it my turn? Okay, that's my turn to block. Like, it's different now. You know what I mean? Hey, D. Mace wasn't running clear routes now. Like, there came a point that was like, hey, man, you got the clear. I'm running the in cut, right? Like, that's just I think that's part of why you don't see it as much in the pros. I think you still do see it some in college. And you definitely can see much of it at the high school level, for sure.
Interesting.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, head coach of the Ensworth Tigers, joining us on D-Maze, Fingen, and Donick, as he does every week. Tim, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
All right, I appreciate it. I didn't know Willie was no middle reliever, okay, once he signed the big contract.
That's right.
I'm a starter.
I need saves. I need wins. Give me the sexy
one or the
stats.
Other.
Yeah. No holds for you, Willie.
No holds for you, Willie. Thanks, Tim.
Yep.
615-737-1025. Okay. I have a Titans question with a twist.
Mm.
And to loosely quote one of the greatest bands of our time, Joe Rexroad, Papa Roach. Our scars remind us that the past is real. So it's time to tear our hearts open just to feel. And I'll explain why coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The game.